Views expressed on the following live program do not necessarily reflect those of KSCO Radio, its staff, management, or advertisers. If something is said with which you disagree, please call us during the program in order to help us balance comments.
Good afternoon. This is Richard Quigley doing my normal Thursday thing. KSCO Studios here on SoCal, Santa Cruz, AM 1080. Got a little talk show we do here about once a week. They actually let me through the door. Talk show. Call in lines. You're going to be 479-1080, 477-1340. If you want to fax something, write big. Type big, 475-2967. That's all 831 area code. And, what a great day out there. It's starting to clear a little bit too cold for me to be riding the bike down to work today, so brought the truck and the dog. That's always a pleasant alternative. A few things on my mind today. One of them is something I saw the other day out in front of the coffee shop. Sort of startled me, and I don't know how much you folks are aware of law enforcement activity relative to young people, where your feelings are about it, any of that kind of stuff. I just happened to be sitting there talking to a bunch of young folks. Maybe it was Friday. It doesn't really matter, Friday or Saturday. And out of the sheriff's department there, that little service center they have in the shopping center, comes a deputy, one of the new guys. With this kid in tow, and I'm guessing this kid, he looked about 13, 14 years old to me. And they're parading him out there to the car, taking him out there to the car, stick him in the back of the car. And I guess the idea was to haul him over to juvie. But he had handcuffs on. And that just sort of startled me because I don't know. Maybe I'm just hypersensitive to that kind of stuff. But it seems to me that... here's this young man. He looks like another 5-6 years. He might start thinking about shaving, and here he's already got that taste of metal on his fingers. He's being walked out there. I mean, on his arms, being walked out there and locked in the back of that car in handcuffs. The guy that was with him, guy that was taking him out there, was half again his size. Now, I'm not saying that there's a reason that deputies need to be putting themselves in a situation of being able to defend themselves. But the guy just didn't look dangerous to me, and he looked very young. And so I made the mistake of asking the deputy, not the one that brought him out, but another deputy, a few minutes later, how old he was, just curious about how old he is. And the surprise is about knocked me over. But I'm only going to tell the story because, and it's not to put down any police officer, including the one that I talked to. It's just to point out that it did happen. But my question to him was, how old is that young fella you got handcuffed there in the back of your car? And the response was, what's it to you? And it's like, whoa, that one surprised me. And I don't remember where it went from there, but I know that was it to you. It really stuck in my craw. And, of course, from behind me, I hear from one of these young people that I've been explaining for years not to be thinking bad about cops and generally carrying that all cops are pig mentality. I've been trying to be, pull that out of them slowly but surely, and this was definitely a step backwards. Anyway, I did get a hold of the professionals and standards office down there at the sheriff's office to find out what that was all about, to find out whether or not what's it to you was on the list of appropriate responses, and I have subsequently been assured that the matter's been dealt with. It's not something that anyone else is likely to face. The really nice part about it was is that I was allowed to do that without messing with the officer's police record. It seems that I've told you guys how dangerous it is to file internal affairs complaints, how they can come back on you in the way of a misdemeanor prosecution for making a false report if they decide to do that. But it seems that the sheriff's office, at least now, there's this sheriff and a sergeant in there, Jim Skillicorn. And it was very effective to be able to call up and talk to him about what I viewed as a problem and have him take care of it without requiring me to file a complaint. The officer was apparently, I'm guessing, was probably talked to or whatever. But I was assured that that was not in accordance with their standards here in the county. So that was all taken care of. It was just really nice to see something like that happen without having to leave any permanent paper trail. I have a guest in the studio today. I'd had this warrant out a couple of weeks ago. I think I talked to you folks about the fact that I'd managed to get a warrant pulled. And because the government will never admit when they've done anything wrong, it's a little difficult for me to figure out exactly why it was pulled. My contention was that it didn't state a misdemeanor crime, therefore it couldn't be a legitimate warrant. But nobody actually told me that that was the case. All I know is that when I brought that up in the context of that and I didn't see a signature on it, what happened was is that they ended up pulling the warrant. I wasn't really sure why. So I went down and I got the paperwork on what you got to have on a warrant. And, of course, the frontline law, the first thing you read, says that it's got to have, among other things, a judge's signature. And then you keep reading and you find out that it dribbles into the vehicle code. And all of a sudden, you don't need a judge's signature. So I'm thinking, okay, well, if it wasn't the judge's signature, then it had to be because it was a misdemeanor. Anyway, what I did was, is that in the course of my research, one of the things I always do is get a hold of a lawyer friend of mine and get a lawyer's interpretation of the language, the English language, because I guess only lawyers can read the law and understand it. And I hadn't turned your microphone on yet.
Oh,
so this is Kate Wells, ladies and gentlemen. She's she's been a civil rights attorney in this county for more years than she wants to remember, I'm sure. And been to Matt on a lot of issues. And this thing on the warrant, we've been both reading through this. And have you figured out yet what it is that's required to have a legal warrant, an arrest warrant in the state of California?
Well, first of all, it appears that a signature isn't necessary, that a clerk who has the authorization from a magistrate or judge to stamp his name can actually issue an arrest warrant, which is unbelievably frightening.
So the process, it does require that the judge make a written declaration or something and hand it that it's filed with the court that says that the clerk has the authority to stamp his signature.
That's what it appears from this case. It's a People versus Weitzer, 269 Calap Second, 274.
For those who speak Greek.
Yeah. And in this case, they were a guy was stopped and on a warrant, and the attorney representing him was subjecting to the fact that the warrant had not been signed by a magistrate, but only stamped by a clerk. And the court said, even though there are a couple of cases that say that statute which purports to authorize the clerk of the court to issue a warrant upon complaint in writing under oath is unconstitutional, they said that it is all right to allow them to just stamp the name of the judge.
We ran into a decision a few years ago out of Orange County, and I can't remember the name of that case. If I could, I'd go do a word search in my old crashed hard drive files. But where the all the warrants in that county were recalled by a decision out of the Superior Court because the contention of the defendant in at least one case was that the failure to appear charge was being brought by a court clerk, and other California law says that the only people that can initiate a criminal action is the district attorney. So we sat there and read through that case, and the Superior Court found that these warrants, because the clerk couldn't start a criminal action, they were all bogus, and there was a panic down there. I think something like 250,000 people suddenly liberated, and so the Fourth stepped in, and they fixed all of that. They published their opinion. They wouldn't publish the opinion, which is the favorite hiding grounds of bad justices. And next thing you know, we're back to square one. We still don't know what it is that's required under warrant. I mean, folks, you do. I know you're all sitting there saying, I'm never going to be arrested. You got to be, you know, an idiot to get arrested and all. But it's really not true. Anybody can end up arrested. And they don't teach us the things we need to learn in school. I've never understood why it is that our curriculum in school does not prepare us to deal with the laws that we're going to be required to obey. There's nobody in there explaining what our rights are, you know, and how to search code and how to use a law library. None of that stuff. And it's, you can't tell me that you got to be a lawyer, that the only reason you'd have to learn that is if you're going to be a lawyer, because it's just not so. Everybody deals with their government. Everybody does. And it would seem to me that it would be basic criteria for an educational system to teach young people how to deal with the law, how to read law, how to understand law, how to read statutes, understand statutes, how to interact with the police, how to interact with the courts. And they don't do any of that. And I'm
20 years ago, I wrote a curriculum for a legal class, which I thought should have been required in high school. I mean, we graduate knowing how members of the House of Representatives, and we don't know what our rights and responsibilities are with regard to the law, which, you know, you graduated 18, you are a responsible human being at that point. You can enter into a contract, you can, and it's absolutely insane. The only thing we have in the schools now is an extracurricular activity where they have a mock trial. This is something that they do in their spare time. So I submitted this curriculum to the State Board of Education and, you know, just got a very quick response, which was no, thank you.
Well, I wonder why that is. I mean, did you investigate it enough? Or I know, because when we go to our gut always looks...
Cynical self.
Yeah, exactly. We get jaded and sinister views, you know. Well, this is a conspiracy to keep our young people away from being able to be free and exercise their constitutional rights. But surely that wouldn't be the reasoning. But nothing concrete. They didn't say no thank you because...
Nope, nothing concrete, just thanks but no thanks.
Well, we know how much the stuff that we live with is guided by lawyers and liability and stuff like that. And do you think that might have entered into it somewhere?
Well, you know, I hate to say this, but I am my cynical self, and I do believe it's because they don't want our kids to know what their rights are in terms of what they can. And I mean, right now, an officer who stops a young kid in a car has no idea what his rights are and what he can refuse. And, you know, he can refuse, for instance, a search of the car. He can, you know, all of those things. And they gain advantage by the fact that there isn't that knowledge.
So, okay. So it is you see it as an intentional dumbing down. I don't see any way to argue around that. One of the things that I tried to do, I don't know if I told you or not, Kate, but I tried to get Mark Tracy to bring one of his guys down here, Kim Allen, to talk to the audience about what to do when a traffic stop goes on to make the cop feel more at ease, to meet our obligations as citizens, you know, what's required of us and all that kind of stuff. And he wouldn't do that. So, I mean, he wouldn't send anybody down, and they were totally prepared to come down. I mean, they weren't worried about me sandbagging them or anything. They know I'm straightforward, you know. I have no idea. And and the thing that made it so twisted is that if there ever was something that is public safety, now it's not all about public safety, but it is purely public safety to teach somebody what to do when you're dealing with an officer out there in the middle of the night, because he don't know. He don't know who the kid is. The kid don't know what to do. There's all kinds of potential for just all kinds of stuff to go wrong, and all we need to do, we don't educate our kids in school. That's what talk radio seems to be good for, is educating folks on talk radio. And it won't do it on talk radio. By the way, speaking of talk radio, the call-in lines are 479-1080, 477-1340. Fax line is 475-2967. Don't be reluctant to get your voice heard in here. But, I don't understand it. And speaking, because as I told you before I brought you in, I was going to just wander around a bit today.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the traffic stop. For a couple of reasons. One, it'll probably give me a chance to tell my favorite story about how to avoid searches. But keeping in mind that this is not legal advice, this is simply what you told your children to do.
Right.
And keep it in that context so that nobody can say, well, I did what Kate Wells said, now she's liable. This is, you know, it's a society, as you know.
Right.
But how did you instruct your kids to deal with officers when they pulled them over? What were they told to do, not do, in what situations?
Well, they were told, first and foremost, to be polite to the officer. And to answer only questions that had to do with identity and the driver's license and registration and all of those things that they're required to do. To ask why they were being detained or arrested, if that was the case. Also to decline any further information than that. In other words, if they ask to search the vehicle, their response should be no. And that's not done from any chance that I thought that they were going to find something in the vehicle. It has to do with exercising their constitutional rights.
And this comes from parents that are both lawyers.
Both lawyers.
Okay. Hold on one second. Okay, we're going to get back to that. There's a couple calls we got out here on folks who want to talk about warrants and traffic stops. Rob's on a cell phone. We're going to sneak him in first. Philip, I'll be with you in just a second. Rob, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How you guys doing today?
Well, pretty good. Welcome to KSCO. Say hi to Kate.
Hi there.
How do you do?
What's on your mind?
Well, I was down in Fresno last week, and one of my buddies down there told me something that happened to him. I thought it was a little bit strange. He was driving down the street with his son as a teenager, and he was listening to a song, his son was, and at the end of the song, the song went bang, bang, bang. And the kid took his hand, and he moved it in the way of a gun and went bang, bang, bang with the end of the song. The cop saw this, pulled him over, put the kid in handcuffs, and told him that he was not allowed to do that because it's a terrorist threat.
Oh.
He then released the kid to his parents, but I thought that was a little overboard.
Yeah, and you know, on the list of overreactions, we could start with a Patriot Act and just go downhill from there, but that's a great, interesting story. Did you have something else you wanted to add?
Because
I have no answer for that, my friend. I have no idea why they would do that.
Okay, well, take what it's worth, then.
All right. Thanks for the call, Rob.
Outrageous.
Isn't that unbelievable? And it happens. We know it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And whether or not it's the officer that's individually scared or just society in general, it's just getting to be a mess. Philip, you wanted to call in and talk about warrants. Welcome to KSCO.
Hey, Gregory, how you doing?
Pretty good. What's up?
Well, I just was listening to the program. Thinking about making a couple comments on the warrant thing. But, yeah, no, my kid was telling me the other day, they were talking about, they had an open discussion about the president and everything he's doing about the war, and somebody said, well, I'm going to shoot the president or something. And the teacher, I guess, heard that, and I guess the next day the FBI came into class and talked to the kid. But anyways.
Well, which school?
That was at Soquel High School.
Right.
About 2 weeks ago. And that's under the Patriot Act as well, I guess, that if you make a threat to the president in open forum, they have some authority through the Patriot Act to come and investigate said what.
I've thought about that. I've thought about why did they call that a Patriot Act. I mean, of all the things to pick, it is so anti anything a patriot would stand for that must surely be the reason that they did it. It's like I've said before, the same government that named that named the department in charge of everything outdoors interior. I mean, you know, only word you can't use. You know, we got a defense department with a first strike capability, which we've more than demonstrated. So we got a Patriot Act that's absolutely subversive to everything that a patriot should stand for.
It helps confuse them, you know. But warrant thing, I remember in court quite a few years ago, I was appearing.
Are you on a cell phone? Because you're falling out there, Philip.
Yeah, maybe I'll try to stand up a little taller. You hear me now?
Well, go ahead. If you fall out again, we'll have to kiss you goodbye here.
All right.
But go ahead.
I was in court, and they said, the sheriff walked in and said, we need to talk to you. So I walked outside of court, and there was three sheriffs there, and they said, hey, we have these warrants for your arrest. So I said, well, you know, it kind of must be a mistake, because I was just in court 4 days ago, and I got another court date, you know, let me see, in about 3 days from now. And, of course, I never miss my court dates because they're important. Well, they arrested me and held me for 4 days, and I got in front of the judge about 4 days later, and they still didn't have the warrants. And about 2 weeks later, I got the warrants, and they were dated about an hour, or they were dated Monday morning, about 4 days later after my arrest. So just take warrants when and where, and, you know, however they want to make them.
Well, that's what happens when we got judges out of the loop, and they don't, they're not required to sign anymore. Philip, thanks for the call, and we'll keep listening.
All righty. Bye-bye now.
Bye. Yeah, there you go. And that's happened more than once. Have you had that experience, Kate?
Oh, not more than twice a week.
Well, you know, and I know that as an officer of the court, this is my personal opinion. The fact that Kate is not going to climb in here and tell me to shut up that I'm absolutely wrong is not because she's not a good officer of the court. It's because I'm the host of the show and I have control of the microphone. So you get to hold me responsible, solely responsible for the comment and observation that one of the unique things about Santa Cruz, in my view, as I understand it, is that we have one of those counties where, yeah, we got all that law out there, but we're not going to bother with that until some judge tells us what the law is, because we've got a bunch of judges in this county that have such disdain for following the law. They just don't want to do it. And I can tell you time after time, judge after judge, where even if they in all other ways follow the law, when push comes to shove and at the benefit of the doubt belongs to the citizen, That one is never going to happen, at least not with anybody that's not part of the politically, you know, the in group. But anyway, with that said, I guess the point is that it wouldn't really make a lot of difference if we required the judges to sign the warrants, because they wouldn't require that they be lawful warrants anyway, I guess was where I was going. Let's get back to you wanted to say something?
Well, yeah, I'd like to get back to the youth and the law. And
the stop, the traffic stop. Because we headed to the point where you weren't going to let them in the car, and you told your kids not to let them in the car. Was there any other information that you imparted to them?
I my mind is off into it in a totally different direction at this point, so I can't think of anything else at this point. But
well, tell me where you went.
Where my mind went is to a more sinister kind of interpretation of what's going on, and I'd like to bring up a couple of examples of why it might be more sinister, and one of the examples is the DARE program in the schools. It seems that even though they're not willing to really give a class in legal rights and responsibilities, they are quite quick to be able to give a class in having a uniformed officer teaching our children. And I have nothing against the officer who was doing it, by the way, because he's a very good personal friend of mine.
Great guy.
Fabulous guy. But the DARE program has been discontinued in quite a few jurisdictions because of the fact that what they found is that the kids who are DARE graduates are actually more likely to become addicted to hard drugs than those who have not gone through the DARE program. And it's for a couple of reasons. Number one, here you have an officer teaching kids about drugs, not a doctor, not a nurse, and immediately impressing on these young impressionable minds the fact that drugs and drug abuse is a police problem, not a health problem, and that if in fact the inevitable experimentation, shall we say, does happen, that their immediate mindset is, I'm a criminal, and I'm doing criminal activity. And that's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Once that whole train of thought starts to happen, gee, I can't tell anybody because I'm doing, you know, this is illegal, and that whole thing just
got it.
Goes from there.
All right. I've got to take a break right now. This is KSCO, AM Radio, Santa Cruz. I'm going to run a few spots here real quick, and then we'll be right back.
Hard-hitting news with the day's top stories, national and local.
Well, let's not waste a bunch of time with that. I just love that tune, but I'm not going to do it right now. Okay, we got your mic back on. I got a call from Carmel Valley. Joe's calling in from Carmel, and it's a long-distance call. I didn't mean to make you listen through all those commercials. Joe, how you doing?
Hey,
I'm doing pretty well.
Welcome to KSCO. What would you like to add to the
Well, I have a comment and then a question. Every time I listen to the phrase, the courts upheld, I always find myself remembering that the courts upheld that women really weren't entitled to the right to vote, that slaves were really only two-thirds of a person for the purpose of population, and that blacks really did have to drink from separate water fountains, which leads me to the question.
Sure.
You know, I don't know that judges aren't influenced by people or groups that have agendas.
Of course they are.
And I don't know how we combat that, and I'd love to hear you and Kate maybe talk about some solutions or maybe some approaches that might try to move them toward a more fair and balanced approach to law.
Yeah. Yeah, you mean first we start with the legislature and then we get a law and then finally the court comes around and says, yeah, that's the way that works, where they actually follow it?
Or even let's go one step further to make sure that the laws that the legislature passes are actually constitutional.
Well,
imagine that.
You know, there's
nothing novel.
I'm going to tell you a story about that one, Joe, because this is one of those things that you got to do the right kind of stuff to get to. Dan, hold on. I'm going to get to you. It's really important that you're there. Anyway, this is when they were passing the Safe Streets Act of 1994. I went up to Sacramento, and I poked around up there until I got into legislative counsel's office. Now, I'm here to tell you, Joe, that don't happen. I just happen to be one of them guys that can get past those doors. I think it's because I flirt with the secretaries. I don't know. But anyway, I ended up sitting in this guy's office, and he is the lawyer for the legislature, one of the lawyers, and he gives him legal advice all the time. And so I says to him, relative to the Safe Streets Act of 1994, that's the one that took away driving as a right and tried to make it a privilege, but that's another story. Anyway, I said, what happens with these when these guys write a statute and it's unconstitutional? How do those get passed here, you know? And he says, well, we send a letter to the legislator and we attach it to the bill and send it back to the legislator, you know, after we've drafted the language for him, explaining to him the degree that we think it might be unconstitutional. And I said, well, is that tied in with the bill so that everybody in the legislature that sees that gets to see it? I mean, what is that? Because I don't see it in part of your legislative opinions. And he says, no, that's just a cover letter. And I said, so they can just take it off the top and drop it in the trash and just keep going? He said, well, I guess if they wanted to, they could. Now, that's the way it happens, Joe. That's the way it happens. I know that's discouraging, especially when you consider that the legislature makes, by the pride of Mr. Senator McPherson, 1,000 new laws a year, you know, like they're doing piecework. and he takes a great deal of pride in that, by the way. But, yeah, that's the way it is. And of course, the letter, just so you'll understand and appreciate the whole wraparound on this, the fact that the letter is sent to the guy that wants the bill provides county council or alleged council with a copy, which, of course, they put in a folder and put in their file. So the day of the guillotine comes, they can come out there and say, well, see, we sent him a letter
we
and told him. You got it?
Yeah.
So they got themselves covered, but they ain't doing nothing for you and me. So do we need to look at that? Do we need to figure out some way to fix that? Oh, yeah. And guys like you out there keeping track of this, we can do that. As far as the courts go, Kate, I'm going to let you take that. The only thing I'm going to say before I turn that one over to Kate is that Art Danner comes up for the first time. We get to vote on whether or not we think he's a suitable judge. That'll be sometime the first part of next year. And I swear, it's going to be nothing but people out of the loop that'll put an X in the yes box. No doesn't fire him, but if we don't outnumber the no's to yeses 4-1 on Danner this next year, it's because there's not near enough people listening to KSCO. So, Joe, I'm gonna let Kate take it from here, and you get your answer offline. Can I cut you off?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. There was one interesting thing I think I learned out of my constitutional law course in 25 years ago in law school, and that is that there are enough precedents in the Supreme Court to justify just about anything. And so what they do is they decide how they want to go politically on an issue, and then they'll find some precedent that'll back it up. They may have to go back to, you know, the 1800s to find it, but they will find something. the politicization of the court system is really an ugly thing. And one of the most recent examples is the Ninth Circuit decision on the under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. Every legal scholar agrees that they made the right decision when they said that was not constitutional. And yet the hue and cry went out, the political hue and cry went out. We want that in our Pledge of Allegiance. And what do? They back down. Now, they finally did come back again and say, yes, it is unconstitutional, but now it's going up to the Supreme Court, and, you know, we've seen what's been coming down from there.
Yeah, well, you're not hopeful about them anyway.
No.
I got a deputy, Dan Campos, online here, and I don't know whether we're supposed to tell him you're a deputy. Does this mean you're going to hang up on us, Dan?
Oh, no, that's perfectly fine. How are you doing?
Cool. Welcome to KSCO. You remember Kate.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
I tell you, I've listened to Intrinsic Radio. I've listened to talk show radios for years, and have been moved to call, but never have. But this one here, I've got to call.
Well, thank you.
First of all, I just want to apologize on behalf of the sheriff's office for the response you got in front of the coffee shop, the what's it to you response.
No, that's okay. Thank you very much. Not you're doing it. It's been well handled, Dan.
And the thing is, it's those responses that create the separation between the public and the police.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And I tell you, here's an example, because I'm always trying to break the stereotype that the cops are the bad guy with young people. It's a daily effort.
It's tough.
I was in front of the coffee shop night before last, and there was a group of five or six young people out in front drinking coffee. And as I went out of the service center there to get a cup of coffee, everybody kind of shut up and all had an unhappy look on their face. And so I stopped and said, hey, why does everybody look so unhappy? And everybody broke into smiles and started talking. But you see, there was that resistance. Because the bad guy came out, you know.
Well, sure, and I got to tell you, it was a shocking thing when I got that response that I did from that one deputy, because here's a dozen kids sitting there, and now they're the ones that are paying your wages in 10 years, as you well know.
Every time the public engages a policeman, that's an opportunity for that policeman to gain a resource to better do his job to serve the public.
Amen. And I think you're preaching to the choir with me, and I know, Kate.
Absolutely.
You know,
Dan, we thank God every day that you're out there.
Yeah, guys like you for sure.
And I thought it was totally appropriate to at least get that perspective out to the listening audience, because there are a lot of new people in the sheriff's office now, and there are quite a few veterans out there too. We're trying to impart that perspective to them because it works for them. You know?
It really does. And first of all, if one of you guys, some bunch of guys jumps one of you sometime, and you're going to need somebody to jump in and pull them off.
You're exactly right.
Absolutely. It is so important for that relationship to be solid and for young people to obey the law because it's the right thing to do, as opposed to obey the law because they're afraid not to, build such a much healthier society. Yeah, I mean, these are the kind of things that I've been trying to focus on and bring to the front for years. And for some reason, I am still viewed by far too many as the enemy.
Yes. Well, you know, the police are outnumbered. Public.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, I'm totally prepared to jump in and do what I can to help in any situation, except for a couple of guys who shall remain nameless today. I've covered them earlier.
And one other comment regarding the kid in handcuffs.
Yeah, what is?
Well, my guess is that wasn't for officer safety purposes necessarily, but more than likely to ensure that he doesn't flee, he doesn't run away. You know, that's what I'm thinking. But I don't know the circumstance.
Yeah, it just didn't feel right to me. You know, and I talked to a deputy friend of mine about it, and he said that's. It's kind of officer discretion, and that he felt that there was some justification. But as you know, because it was a young man, that we couldn't get into any details about why he was arrested at all. I couldn't ask and had no business knowing, you know, and I respect and regard that, you know, that's right. But at the same time, man, there's generally, overall, a couple of folks that there's two groups of people that a society can be judged on how they treat. And I don't know who it was that said it better, but the fact is that children and elderly ladies, and if when I when I think that a 55-year-old woman or a 60-year-old woman that may have somehow or other ended up with an arrest warrant for a failure to appear by whatever set of circumstances, if she's taken into custody by a police officer, the policy is that she's to be cuffed up. And it's like, I know on the one hand you hear me complain a lot about too much discretion to the officers, but on the other, I sometimes think there's not enough. I think that when an officer is comfortable to transport somebody without those, there should be no higher authority saying everybody. You know what I'm talking about? You understand what I'm saying?
I do, and this reminds me of a training I recently had with my peers, and we were discussing a new policy that was going to come before us. My comment was, what makes this sheriff's office great in Santa Cruz County, and it is a great office, is that we have discretion. We really do. And that, with good judgment, makes great relations.
Well, that's cool.
You know, the problem, as I see it, is especially, and this has to do with the youth, is that one bad experience sets the tone for this child's life.
Yeah, for life.
I agree completely. And I can't help oftentimes in when I deal with young people, even when I arrest them, I talk to them about a future in law enforcement.
Right.
Because it is a great job.
Are you doing any training, or are you just still a beat deputy?
I'm just a simple policeman.
Okay. You haven't. Are they going to put you into training, Dan?
I don't know. This is the first time I've actually ever had any public speaking. I'm kind of nervous, actually.
Well, I hope that there's nothing ill comes of it, because it's really been a contribution to where we were going today.
I'm going to send a letter of recommendation, and then I think that you ought to be a training officer at least.
Thank you very much for the call, right, man. I really appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye.
Jim's trying to give us a call from Santa Cruz. Jim, are you there? Welcome to KSCO.
Yes, good afternoon, folks. I just wanted to call because the attorney just mentioned leaving bad taste in the mouth. I ran into an incident the other day where I was going into a supermarket, and I was still outside, and a young man came out the front door, very clean cut, typical-looking kid, but except that he was on crutches. And he, in his right hand, he had an envelope of developed film that he had picked up. And just as I was getting ready to pass him, going the other way, getting ready to go into the store, as he was coming out, out comes the store manager screaming and hollering, "Where are you going? You know, what are you doing with those?" And the kid said that he was picked them up for his mom, and he had been under the impression that mom paid for the films when she brought them in. I mean, which we all know is not the way it usually works. But anyway, I didn't think anything more about it, except that the supermarket, the kid asked if he could call his dad. And the supermarket manager says, "You can call your mommy or you can call your daddy, but I'm calling the police." And just the tone of his voice and everything else, you know, I thought was inappropriate.
Yeah, and of course, what we get to doing, we're not going to do it on the air. We're not going to name the store, but
no.
But you can most certainly show your dissatisfaction with your feet. And if I witness it at the same or a similar store,
exactly. That's what I was going to say next. But I went in and did my shopping, and I was going along, and I was thinking about it, you know, and thinking, you know, that kid's not more than 14 or 15. Whatever. You know, too bad, you know, if what he was saying, you know, give him the benefit of the doubt. But anyway, while I was shopping, two cops show up, and they go back to the holding area, wherever they keep shoplifters. One of them was inside, and one of them was outside. And I walked over to the police officer standing outside. I said, "Officer, excuse me." I said, "That kid's pretty young looking. I think he made a mistake, but I don't know. Is there any way the store will let me pay for the film?" And the police officer was not rude to me, but he just, I said, "It sounded like the kid made a mistake." The police officer was not rude with me. He just told me, "No, that's not possible. We're handling this."
Yeah, what he probably had to do, it was keep you out of a juvenile situation. Those things are real tenuous for those officers. We're running out of time.
Okay.
Jim, thank you very much
for
calling the story. Wow. See, time goes by faster than you think. The phone call from Deputy Campos was just the best.
Awesome.
I'm so glad that happened. We got 2 minutes of summing up if you want to go at it. Have you got some sum up you want to do? Oh, You found an article about we don't have enough laws.
Yeah. Just to cut this out of the Sentinel today, actually, from the it comes from the Cox News Service. No comment there. The cash short New York unleashes ticket blitz to collect more fines. They're giving out tickets now for dire crimes such as feeding pigeons and illegal use of milk crates. Even too many letters on the sign on your awning for some of the businesses. And the police union is so embarrassed by it that it's begun a don't blame the cop ad campaign.
Yeah. New York.
Right of the time.
Yeah, that's what happens when you got too little room and too many people.
Yeah.
Well, it's been another great show for me. I really appreciate you coming down today, Kate. My audience, as usual, I thank you guys for listening. I thank you for calling in. We'll be back next Thursday, do it some more. Don't know what all we're going to talk about, but we can find something. I guess the chairs and the tables are gone from the coffee roasting area in Aptos. What a bummer. Thank you, Michael. This is KSCO, AM 1080 Santa Cruz. It's 1 o'clock.